Hey all, happy Sunday. And I've just come off the radio here with TNT Radio live in Australia with Darren. And we had a great discussion on the hate speech laws and the immigration issues and all the things that are happening in the world today. And I gave all the context for where they're all coming from, the why, if you will. So a fantastic discussion. It's up on their YouTube channel, but they absolutely told me it was okay to go ahead and grab the piece and to drop it in here for you guys. And the links down below, you'll see the TNT Radio Live link, which is great. Subscribe to those guys, get involved. Great news on what's going on in the world. And also I've put the link to my talk in Southampton, which gives the full detail and geopolitical history, all fully published. So no worries about misinformation or shadow banning. It's all fully published in the archives and in other publications. It's simply history, but it explains exactly what's happening in the world today. So without further ado, here we are in our interview on TNT Radio. Enjoy.
This is Digging Deeper with T.D. Denslow on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I've got Ivor Cummins waiting for me in the room, the Fat Emperor himself. Ivor is a technical manager, a team leader, a biochemical engineer, a problem-solving specialist, technologist, and public speaker of some note. He has recently recorded and given a talk called Governing in a Planetary Emergency. There was actually a part one to that talk that he gave, which was about nutrition. I know we said, we'll quickly have a little mention about Eric Clapton to start with, but I'm going to ask you for some nutritional advice because I bought a new top yesterday. I keep showing it off. And then I looked sideways in the mirror after my friend who's down from London and said, Darren, you look pregnant, when I asked her how I looked with my top. And I think I have got a massive sugar belly that I didn't notice because I'm always looking in the mirror front on. So I'm just going to go straight to you. I was going to do a story on Rwanda and immigration, but it's a bit boring. And I'm much more interested in getting some advice on how, Ivor, I can solve the sugar belly that I'm developing in my old age of almost 46, mate. So any advice then on how I can counteract my sugar belly?
At its simplest, I mean, there's so much science in the last 10 years for me, but at its simplest, I always tell people that there's a thing that's causing most modern obesity and chronic disease. It's not really exercise, though that's important. It's the food we eat. And Essentially, I keep it simple and I say the devil's triad. And that was my phrase to simplify. So sugars, refined grains, refined carbohydrates, and seed oils, the heart-healthy vegetable oils, and they are anything but. So those three things are together the problem with modern chronic disease, mostly, overwhelmingly. So the question is, what if you avoid sugars and you avoid the seed oils, you don't use vegetable oils, and you avoid refined carbohydrates? Well, the problem is, it's very difficult to do because they are the major constituents of most ultra-processed foods. And the British Medical Journal a few years ago came out with the shocking reality that over 60% of UK calories consumed are ultra-processed foods, and they are the devil's triad. So you see how hard it is to dodge. The simple solution is eat real food only, which is meat, fish, eggs, and above-ground vegetables, ideally, not starchy potatoes and sugary things. And that's it. Now, it's not easy, because trying to eat real food after all the addictive processed foods we've been assailed with for a half century, it's not easy. But when you realize you gain everything, so you get mental acuity, weight loss, toning, you feel much better, mood elevates, you're more effective, productive, your whole world changes. That's how big the prize is to just eat real food. It's not just a bit of weight loss. It's everything.
It's almost certainly after the comment I got from my friends yesterday saying I look pregnant, and I really do. It's like I'm a skinny, fat bloke, and it's the first time I've really noticed just how bad it is. My 2024 New Year's resolutions are going to be following along the guidance that you just give me with regards to my eating habits. Sugar, stop frying in vegetable oil, and don't eat any processed food. And I'm actually sort of along that way. You're shaking your head at me. I'm along that way anyway, but I think I need to double down on my efforts. Okay, today we're going to be talking about less savory topics, immigration, the agenda that's pulling upon us, the hate speech laws that they're trying to implement in Ireland as a result of recent troubles on the streets of Dublin. But before we get to all those horrible things, I just wanted to hear about your meeting with a very famous guitar player, Eric Clapton, Ivor.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't think it's particularly private, but he did a small charity concert in London. And because he had been very affected by the COVID kind of madness in many ways and the mass medication, and he publicly had interviews on this and he did name check me. But I was delighted last week when he had obviously decided there's a whole bunch of people maybe who deserve some acknowledgement. So he contacted me and invited me and some family to come to this private concert. So it was around 200 people only, and we got seats A1 to A4 right in the front.
Ideal front row, and you've got a name check as well. So that's definitely worth putting on as a notch on your bedpost, mate. Okay, let's get straight into it. So what I wanted to talk to you, I've got a few, but none as deep a notch as Eric Clapton is. Ireland. What's going on in Ireland, Ivan? We've got mass uncontrolled immigration right across Europe. Ireland seems to be a particular hotbed or welcoming place for people from Africa and other far-off destinations around the planet. You've got an incredibly woke government in Ireland. We've seen that there have been some crimes that aren't hate crimes. They're just stabbing of children. You know, this is diversity is our strength. What's going on in Ireland at the moment, mate?
Yeah, well, I mean, I said, Darren, many years before even COVID, which triggered all of the last few years of madness on climate and trans and all the other stuff and mass immigration, many years before any of that, I said Ireland was basically a vassal state of the pharmaceutical industry. So around 60% of our GDP was biotech and pharma. All our politicians just fall to their knees in front of big corporate, big pharma, because they get jobs and they get, you know, they give tax breaks and they get a lot of money in GDP. So that's the way it was. But now, since COVID, Ireland clearly is not just a vassal state of big pharma. It's basically a vassal state of World Economic Forum / UN / EU. So we're kind of a test bed or a prototyping bed to try out the most insane, dystopian, crazy stuff that they can think up top. And like everything I'm going to say in this conversation is all published, all referenced in Rockefeller Archives, UN, EU, zero conspiracy theory. And it's actually quite simple to work out. I mean, it took me a few months in COVID to get a grasp of the full root cause picture, which is my specialty. But once you get it, like in a real complex problem, once you put it together and you've double verified with experts all over the world and you've documented everything, it actually is quite clear. So we can talk through some of where it's coming from. But yes, Ireland, the hate speech laws they're bringing in, we can talk about, they're insane. The reaction to the stabbing of those poor children and the teacher was utterly insane. And like, it is surreal to a lot of people who just can't understand, how can this be happening in Ireland? But actually, the reasons are, you could say they're complex, but they're actually quite simple when you understand all of the pieces, the drivers, and who's driving what.
So let's just start with immigration. I've got an article here. It comes from an Irish mainstream media outlet. Ireland says it's not able to house all those asylum seeking in the Republic of Ireland. There are tent streets, tent cities being appearing on Dublin streets. The Republic is currently accommodating more than 100,000 people. I'm assuming these are legal immigrants. How bad is the immigration situation in mainland Ireland? And why are we being flooded with people from all around the world and into Europe?
Right. Well, the why question, okay, is a big one. So we'll put that aside for a moment. But suffice it to say, It's being driven from the top, and we can talk about that shortly. And that's why the crisis of accommodation on the ground simply doesn't matter. Our own politicians who are force-feeding and ramming migrants, economic migrants overwhelmingly, I would say, into the country, they're simply responding to directives. And those directives and where they come from don't care about a lack of accommodation. That's just the basic fact. So that's how you have this hard-to-understand scenario where the ordinary person in the street can't understand why all our politicians in lockstep are stuffing the country when we don't have capacity even if we wanted to, and we want to be good people and nice people. So that's that. The situation's very bad. I give an example, an actual fully published in the newspapers example. In the southeast of Ireland a few weeks ago, they had a nursing home for a community of around 1,200 people, I believe, and it was being built and it was badly needed. They switched it over, cancelled it, and they turned it into, and they're working on it, a home for housing young male unmarried men, migrants. So it's not women and children, it's not Ukraine war, you know, no question. They're Georgia, the Congo, all over the world. And they actually cancelled the nursing home. So the local people got 1,000 people to march, and the media basically just sneered at them and kind of called them far right. Yeah. I mean, it's insane. But that's what's happening. Multiply that by a big number. Hotels in small rural areas are being taken over and stuffed. And there's an embarrassment now in the government about the tent city problem. And they're saying, oh, this is terrible. It's embarrassing. But they made it because they didn't care a toss for our 15,000 or whatever homeless. They did nothing for them in the last 10 years. But now they're embarrassed after force-feeding in 100,000 people or more in the last year or two, creating an obvious, inevitable problem, and now it's embarrassing. But the problem is they're responding to basically diktats from very far up the chain, and that's why there's this misfit between what they're doing and what the result is that makes no sense. That's why.
And is the Irish government still, I'm assuming it's a stupid question. I know it's a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are they still bringing in or are people from around the world into Ireland now? So we've got tent cities on Dublin. They're going, oh, look, this is terrible. How did this happen? Bring in more immigrants. Is that what happened? Is it just going to keep filling up the country there?
It gets a bit hard to tell because, like COVID and like excess mortality, they begin to not share the figures so readily. So you can see the graph of immigrants to Ireland monthly, and of course it goes off the scale in the last year or two. And Ukraine was the so-called reason, but to be honest, the Minister for Children, which that's another whole story, he sent out last year a tweet in many languages, basically saying, come on over, within a few months you'll have a house, you'll have all these, all the money, I think they get free phones as well. Ireland is open for business, come on in, economic migrants. And it was indeed in Ukrainian, and there's a little bit of Ukrainian war stuff in there, you know, it's a good cover. But he also put in the languages of East Africa and Congolese, I believe, and Georgian. So put out in all those languages. So the narrative was, oh, Ukraine, and everyone wants to help Ukraine, women and children. But it was heavily dominated by men, youngish men, who you'd think would be over there fighting, like we would if we were at war, and also all these other areas. So it was clearly cover. It was a cover to maximum influx of economic migrants. That was the reality. It's on the record.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if I was a Ukrainian man and I heard that the Russians were coming, I would have jumped on the first plane or bus or train out of that country and headed to the green pastures of Ireland. But there were actually a lot of videos when we had this influx of Ukrainian refugees or immigrants into the UK and into Ireland. There were quite a few videos going, are you from Ukraine and that? And it would be a black person with an Indian accent or Bangladeshi accent or something saying, I'm from Ukraine. So you say they used it as cover to allow immigration, but did they use Ukraine as cover to allow illegal immigration from everywhere except from Ukraine?
Well, I think Ukraine also. So the cover story wasn't 100% false, because of course they allowed plenty of Ukrainians in. Otherwise, it would have been too obvious a fraud. But they just in the back door then put all the other languages out just to flood with whoever and anyone. And that's just the way it was. And that's effectively, it's on the record. So, and you saw all the videos and, the people say, oh, yes, I'm from Ukraine. Then there's no follow-up question that's answered because they can't answer it because of it. Yeah. And there's a huge thing that even got in our mainstream where countless people were coming in and they got on the plane with a passport because they couldn't get on without one. And when they got to Ireland, oh, can't find my passport. So yeah, I'd say there's masses of passports and trash cans all over Europe and way beyond that from the people who turn up in Ireland.
And sort of just we're going to a break now. It's mainly men. Very quickly, we've got like a minute before the break. Why do you think? And I'm sure it's gonna come on further in our conversation. Why it is mainly young men? There are people who think, oh, we're importing an army. Some people, oh, it's because they don't care about their women and children and they're leaving them behind in war zones. But we're bringing them in. Why are we bringing in primarily young men? Is it just from an economic standpoint?
Well, my best shot at that is not about creating an army, but certainly about creating disruption and undermining cultural heritage, sovereignty, nationality, and nationalism. Mm-hmm. It's certainly for that, but I don't think it's directly, people say, oh, they're going to make an army. No. It's simpler than that. So in the 1920s and 30s, the Pan-European Union documented an intention for a European superstate, globalism, if you will. Yeah. And they were serious and they were pretty heavy-hitting guys. And they've been going ever since, and many more groups. And they documented and had the idea, and they are correct, that you'll never have a pan-European full union, a super state of Europe, if you have all these different countries, like red-haired Irish with all of their music, and then you have Swedes, tall and austere, with blue eyes. If you have that all across countries of Europe and they have their own cultures, you're obviously never going to make them into one big blob, one big blancmange super state of generic people. Mm-hmm. The obvious thing to do is flood in plenty of very foreign people. And in a sense, this is the funny thing. You get accused of racism if you talk about this fascinating topic. But the people who are driving it are the ultimate racists because they're using poor people and races as a tool to get global governance. Mm-hmm. And that's very racist, to use people as pawns to pick and choose races that will most disrupt other countries. That's shocking racism, right?
Yeah, it's the worst type of racism. Oh, look at what you're from Plymouth. You're from a city that was built by slavers. And I think, you're importing all these people in dinghies and bringing them in through, planes, and they're losing their passports and they're all from Africa and you're going to use them as cheap labor. So you're right. It's an ultimate expression of racism. And the people who are the establishment, the elite figures, the globalists who are allowing or giving the orders for this to happen, they go around calling everyone racists and Nazis and white supremacists and far right. And actually, that's just in a case of a projection onto the public, like you just said. It is the racists that are in power. We're going to carry on this conversation just a few moments, Ivor, here on TNT Radio.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. You're here with me, Dee Dee Denzo, on a Sunday edition of Digging Deeper. I'm here chewing the fat with Ivor Cummins. I'm just looking at the live chat. So big shout out to everyone in there. I was just asking, why are they bringing all the young men into Ireland, UK, Europe? A comment here from Nige in the live chat says, the biggest weapon that they bring in is sperm. And actually, is he going to say it? They're bringing in breeders, aren't they, as part of the Kalergi plan, because they want to breed out the whiteness of Europe and Northern America and probably Australia to create that homogenized society where the English will finally get on with the French, because it wouldn't happen unless we were all the same color and all the same religion. So big shout out to everybody in the live chat. Keep your comments coming in. I will try to ask Ivor if I see them in time. As a result of all this massive immigration, there have been some violent incidents. The most recent one was the stabbing of some young kids and women at a school by an Algerian Irishman. He was sort of a naturalized Irishman. What was the feeling amongst the public, not just on that incident, but on immigration in general? We saw the violence or the scenes in Dublin. That's now resulted in a push on hate speech legislation and censorship in Ireland. Can you tell me some more about that, please, Ivor?
Yeah, well, that was classic exploiting. So there's no question. There was two things. One, it kind of was the spark to cause a lot of trouble. And it's very important that people internationally realized the videos were clear as crystal. These were not far right. These were not ideologues. These were young hoods in hoodies who smashed windows, looted buildings, and set police cars on fire. And it's happened before in Ireland's past, you know. So it was nothing to do with far right. You could say these young hoods were angry about migrants. You could even say some of them were a bit racist or whatever. But that's not the point. But the government jumped in and screamed, I said, like a demented rosary. You know, the repeating of the rosary in Ireland years ago. A demented rosary, far right, far right, far right, far right. And it was just comical to watch because they knew and had seen the videos and they knew there were a bunch of young thugs. And the young thugs were taking advantage of the sentiment in the public that has become very, very concerned about uncontrolled migration. And they just took advantage of it, knowing the public were angry at this stabbing. It's time to like have a bit of a riot. Right. That's what the situation was. That is the fact. But the thing is, the government then, of course, saw this problem. And we had a Red Sea, I think, official poll. And over 75% of broad sector of Ireland said our immigration policy has become too lax and it needs to slow down. So 75% of people know there's a problem. They know there's a problem. And that's a fact. And it was taken advantage of. But it was amazing to watch the government see this problem. We know the people are angry. The broad swaths of people are angry. We know that we're forcing a policy that comes directly from above on them. That's why they're angry, right? And they're entitled to be. So what are we going to do now? Well, obviously, what any politician does, flip the truth upside down and use the situation. So they're actually using it, saying internet hate is what caused the problem, right? So we need our new insane hate speech laws. They didn't say insane. They are insane, Darren. I can give an idea of what's in these hate speech laws. They're palpably insane.
Yeah, I've actually got an article here. Quickly, before I just touch on this article about the new insane hate speech laws that might be coming into place in Ireland. Doesn't the fact that there are 75% of people who are aware of the problem, unhappy about immigration, think it's a problem, doesn't that in itself create a massive problem? Because you've got 75% of people saying, no, stop, enough. And then you've got a very small minority in the government and obviously taking diktats from above, the World Economic Forum, forcing this still. No, you will have this, you haters, you horrible people, you right-wingers, but you will have more immigration, particularly in Ireland. I'm guessing it's fairly volatile there because of the Irish and the red hair. Could we see that there's going to be more trouble on the streets in Ireland and around the west of the Western world?
Yeah, well, that's clearly where it's heading. And our own prime minister that drove this madness personally a few weeks ago came out and went on the record and said, yeah, we've probably overstepped the mark. And he was actually saying what the people were saying. Now, that's very clever because he's a member of the World Economic Forum and he will intimately know what all these strategies are about. But he's covering his ass and speaking out of both sides of his mouth by publicly, he did the same in COVID, publicly going out and appealing a little to the people. And as I said, and I was talking to someone about this, he'll just say that, get a bit of calming down that, oh, maybe our politicians are listening. Let it settle and then open the tap again in a few months and flood the zone again. This is boiling frog. It's so obvious and so hard to watch. But yeah, it's heading for problems. And in any tyrannical emerging government structure, which we're certainly in now, COVID and climate, it's clear as day, they'll use propaganda and they'll use coercion and they'll divide people to conquer, to get people fighting amongst themselves. This is as old as the Roman Empire and before. It's clear as day. But when you actually get to a point where the propaganda ain't working quite enough, inevitably you have to go to force. And that's where the hate speech law, and I would say future draconian force and using your police forces comes into play. So, you know, the carrot you've used, the propaganda carrot, and then at some point you have to bring in a bit of stick. And that's what the hate speech law is, to give a legal cover for when they bring in a bit of stick and they can go over or go after people who have any problem with the government or any problem with these policies. You'll be able to nail them with these laws. That's what these laws are about.
And I've got just a little paragraph. Again, it's taken from an Irish mainstream media outlet about the new proposed hate speech or hate crime laws in Ireland. And it says the creation of a new offence of incitement to violence or hatred is laid out in Section 7. The offence will be based on a person communicating material to the public that's likely to incite violence or hatred. The threshold for this offence is intent or recklessness. So this means the person actually intended to incite violence or hatred. Furthermore, in Section 10, there is an offence for those who create content that would incite violence with the intention of communicating it, but have not yet publicly communicated. So I can have some memes saying, you know, a picture of some boats on a dinghy saying, oh, we need to stop immigration. That could be considered, according to this new proposed Irish hate crime law, as incitement to violence. I could be punished, maybe even in prison for that. And yet it's never gone any further than sitting on my phone. Are the Irish government going to be able to actually implement this? And what pushback is there in Ireland to it?
Well, yeah, there was. It went through one of our houses of parliament as such. And of course, as usual, the politicians are clueless anyway. I mean, anyone who ends up in politics nowadays is either just greedy, selfish, self-interested, and they're technically inept, all of them, because the talents that bring you towards politics are the opposite brain function of technical kind of smarts, mathematical, etc. So we've got a bunch of idiots, sadly, and I know it's easy to poke at politicians, but it's just a fact, right? So that bunch were told, oh, the hate speech law is going to be all nice and it's going to stop extreme skinheads and far-right crazy Nazis. And they all went, oh, great, and they signed off. So it went through the first house, and then people became aware. There was a significant campaign that was successful, and they put it on ice, and they pulled it back off ice on the back of the stabbed children, which is hugely ironic, of course, because they've turned truth upside down. But that law, like you read some of it, it's very important people to understand. We have a 1989 hate speech incitement to violence law, and it's perfectly functional. It's been used 50 or 60 times, I understand, and it actually is people who have actually incited violence, and it works. It's perfect. But what they've done with the new one is they put in anti-law, anti-logic, anti-anything. It's thought crime, Minority Report, 1984. It's essentially, if you have anything and one police constable or Garda, based on whatever he or she hears, can get a warrant from a very low-level court and can knock on your door and take all of your equipment, diaries, anything they want. And they've written in that to not give a PIN number or an encryption code is in itself an offence, right? So it's crazy at that level. The other level it's crazy is because the protected groups are around 10 or 11 now. And it's just absurd. Those groups, they have no problem. So it's all false from the start. And they haven't even defined exactly what the hate is. And the other thing that's, of course, completely insane is if you have anything in your private possession, which you are entitled to have inside your own head, your diary, or a meme, it's up to you to prove that you would not have shared that more widely. So in other words, it's guilty until proven innocent, which is an inversion of the law in itself.
Yeah.
So it's just beyond insane. I mean, I could go on. But the document, like, you have it, you can download it and read pages, think 10, 11. And it's just insane. It is insane. I don't like using that word too frequently. This is purely insane. And the reason it's insane is it comes from the top and the NGOs and the lobby groups. That's why it's insane.
Mm-hmm. It is. And there's nothing more personal than your phone. And you just said, oh, it's up to the individual to prove that they weren't going to disseminate or publish something that was on that phone. That's going to be real difficult to do. Because you go, why have you got that immigration meme on your phone? I just liked it. We think that you was going to send it out. You can't prove otherwise. I'm not sure how that's going to be effectively enforced if that law is implemented. But they probably will use force in order to implement it. And quickly,
I just got to say, you did ask me that specific question. Yeah, a lot of people have raised the point that it's not implementable because it's so absurd. The problem is it gives a chilling effect, even if it's not really implementable in a real way. It's a chilling effect. It's to make everyone self-censor.
Yeah.
So self-censor. And that's one of its massive dangers. Also, during COVID, people brought cases against the absurd anti-scientific masking and a lot of the other nonsense. And they had the data to prove they were correct. And they used a judge at a low level to throw the cases out before they ever got in the court system. So the judges who are meant to be independent, we saw in COVID, they were on the blower to the government in some way, shape or form, or on the golf course, but they knew the way the wind was blowing and therefore they didn't act as judges, as real judges. So they'd be the same for this. You'd have these bizarre findings against people who are kind of enemies of the government, and the judges will roll with it. Not 100%, but in general, it looks like the judiciary now is rolling with the narrative.
Yeah. They've all been corrupted and infiltrated by various organizations, supernatural organizations. Yeah. You've mentioned the WEF, the UN, the WHO. They seem to have a massive controlling influence over our politics and the agenda that's moving forward at a rapid pace. Very quickly, before we start talking about the WEF and some of the content of the speech that you gave in Southampton recently, you said that some politicians intimately know what the plans are, what the instructions they're receiving, what the purpose of those instructions are. Do you think that's actually true, or are they just like the like Varadkar in Ireland is just a puppet? He just gets told what to do. He doesn't question. He just does. You know, he just does exactly what he's told to do, and therefore he has a very nice, happy, comfortable life in accordance with his master's wishes. Do you think they intimately know what they're doing?
I'd say, well, certain people, like, again, I can't prove this because this is an opinion, but the likes of Coveney, who was spotted years ago in Europe with some Bilderberg-y type people in the street, and I would say from everything he's said and done, Varadkar also was personally on stage with Klaus Schwab, so he wouldn't be your average puppet. They have 4,000 young global leaders who have gone through the program, starting with Bill Gates, and then we have Macron, all the other, the lizard in New Zealand, Ardern. So I'd say the people like that in the Young Global Leaders program who have got to high office, they in general would be very knowledgeable about the full strategies for a super state of Europe and a world government, I would say. A lot of the other politicians, however, will be just useful idiots. They won't really know much at all, and they'll believe the nonsense, you know. I wouldn't have much doubt of that. But I will say something, this is funny. We met with some business people and medical people, pretty senior people. We were in a group trying to explain to the government with white papers in September 2020, the data on COVID. And we met with a very senior politician, And it was in secret, obviously, but not illegal, but it wasn't secret. And I gave a short presentation of 10 minutes, just the data on lockdown effectiveness, mortality, true impact, and mask effectiveness and seasonality, my basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, I asked him, you know, would you have been aware of some of that? And he said, well, actually, I am aware of most of it. And he said, you'd be surprised at how many politicians in the Dáil would pretty much be aware of that. But he said, the point is, they all know don't say anything. That these whole things that are transpiring and occurring, they come from very high up and they're agreed at very high levels. Therefore, as an Irish politician, just keep your mouth shut. And you see, people just understand that, even if they don't know the detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they wouldn't be in the positions that they are if they weren't the type of person who was just going to do as they're told and keep their mouth shut. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. That's why I can only get 5% of the vote when I stand in a local election, because I'm not somebody who's willing to say yes and no and wear a rose at. Okay, we're going to go to a break now, Ivor. When we come back, I want to talk about the content of, I know it's been sort of an undercurrent to our conversation, but the content of your speech in Southampton, which I listened to this morning, it was very good. And you talked about Agenda 2030, the whys of what is happening. And more importantly, I want to pick your brain for some solutions, if you have them, because I am sort of bereft of ideas other than pitchforks. So please, stay right with us here on TNT Radio.
You're listening to Digging Deeper with DD Denslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. I'm here for the next 15 minutes. I'm chatting away with Ivor. I can see comments coming in on the live chat here on the tntradio.live website. All positive. Darren, your chat with Ivor is excellent. Any chance you could do a clip video of you and Ivor onto Twitter. TNT are in the process of putting video out in podcast form. We are live on YouTube and Rumble and Odyssey and Facebook and wherever else. But we haven't quite got round to getting all the podcasts out in video, but that should be coming very shortly, and I'll speak to somebody to get some clips of me and Ivor chatting together. Ivor, we were just talking about YouTube and censorship. I've actually had two videos taken down for medical misinformation. You were saying that you was analysing the metrics, and you think that it's actually fairly safe now to talk about vaccine now that the rollout is complete, but you can't criticise the WEF or climate change. That's what you're saying. Is that right?
Well, that's what I've been observing. So I had a few LinkedIn posts taken down and I had a few YouTube videos demonetized. And basically the common factor is climate discussions and WEF UN or Dr. Nordengaard's, which was the basis for my Southampton talk. So the spotlight now, if you talk about vaccines killing people, yeah, they'll still knock you off maybe. But I haven't really been spending time on any of that. But it's very noticeable now, WEF, UN, Nordengaard, Rockefeller history, right? They don't want you talking about that for obvious reasons, because it's the why. And if like even 20% of people had a basic understanding of geopolitical history, which we'll talk about now, this would be almost impossible to roll out, because you'd have a sizable minority of people saying, this is bullshit. It just comes from Rockefeller and the NGOs. Mm-hmm. So that's what's getting hit. And climate is their big strategy now that COVID's passed, Ukraine has passed. Yeah, we got Israel, Gaza. That's a murky one. But climate, as we can see with COP and next year's Summit of the Future, and the BMJ has come out with a huge report that 200 medical journals now are behind saying that the climate emergency is a health emergency. So you see what they're doing? They're trying to merge the two into one, because people have to listen to health nonsense. Clearly, we saw that. And climate, they want to merge it in. And they want to get the legal power of the WHO pandemic treaty coming next year and the World Health Regulations to be able to declare a crisis in health anytime and do whatever they want. Well, put climate in with health, they'd be able to declare a climate crisis as a health crisis. It's so obvious.
And climate change causes pandemics. We get new viruses and new illnesses and new diseases as the temperature gets hotter. I don't know how that works, but apparently it does. And what do we need? We need incompetent governments who can't handle pandemics so that we can have a WHO pandemic treaty. And these are some of the things that you discussed in your talk in Southampton. So my first question really is, why are we experienced, why have we got all these agendas related to climate change, health, digital cooperation, quite like that one. Gender equality and empowerment of women. Women used to have it all. My friend's down from London. She hates the fact that all of her privileges that she had as a woman have now been stripped away with her under the name of feminism. Education and skills. They're just some of the things that you've mentioned in your talk. They are threads of an overarching agenda that's befallen us all, Agenda 2030. Why is all this happening?
Yeah, well, okay, just for Agenda 2030, and I printed out some of the slides there for quick reminders. So World Economic Forum joined up. They were already synonymous with UN. So the first thing for people to understand is if you're going to give a one-word answer as to why, and it's not the whole reason, but if you had to give one word, that word is Rockefeller. So the Rockefeller Brothers Fund in the 1950s put their massive money and might behind their huge family desire. It was a dynasty desire for a world government, globalism, internationalism. And they viewed the UN as their own club. And they gave the huge amount of money and the land for the UN building in New York back in the 40s. So they basically had control of the UN. And they also had a whole other load of other groups like the Council for Foreign Relations, the Harvard Commission, and they were connected in a massive way, and they wanted world government. And they knew it would probably take 50, 60, 70, 80 years. So they knew it would be after their death, but their sons took over and their grandsons and granddaughters took over. So Rockefeller's a big thing, but they set up Rockefeller Brothers Fund. They brought in Kissinger. Everyone knows that old lizard, right? And he managed all their stuff and deep ties to CIA, which funded, part funded the Harvard Commission back in the 60s, and connections to State Department, government, everything. And there's no conspiracy theory there. You see, of course the CIA were involved because they saw that the Rockefeller movements to an international government, well, it would have to have an American leadership because the CIA look out for America. So of course they had to be involved, because it's the future world government. It's really important nationally. So there's no conspiracy theory here. It's all documented. But ultimately, the decades went by. They created the Club of Rome. That's really important. 1968, richest man in Italy funded it. And it was a rich boys club to create climate catastrophe fear. It was a terrorist type group in a way. And the richest man who funded it, it was, what's his name again? Giovanni Agnelli, a richest man in Italy. He was a personal friend and on the board of Chase Manhattan Bank with David Rockefeller. So everywhere you go, Kissinger, Schwab, David Rockefeller, Nelson Rockefeller, Agnelli, on and on, all of these groups that have been built over 50 years with one view towards a world government, all the same characters are there throughout, and it's all documented. That's the beauty. We don't have to talk about weird stuff on Facebook. All documented. So the Club of Rome is really important, and this is key. 1968, that was set up. And I'm just going to read from one of their official documents, actually in a book, The First Global Revolution. And it looks like a communist manifesto. It's got all red all over it and big black letters. That'll tell you. These are ultra-rich capitalists, but they're using the Marxist nonsense to get power. And the people fall for that because it's all about all of us together. But anyway, they said, in searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, i.e. the ultra-rich and the power brokers of the world, we came up with the idea that the threat of global warming, water shortages and the like would fit the bill. They said this. They're admitting it, that would fit the bill. We can use that. So these people decided that climate disaster was a strategy to get global government long before any scientists were involved. Now, of course, through their UN and the UN IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, over decades, they funded and funded and funded climate disaster modeling. And they got rid of all the scientists who were saying, I'm not sure I agree. And they've ended up with a whole field full of yes men and yes women. You see, it's not hard. It just takes many, many decades. And that's what they've got now. This document also said, and it's a quote and published, all these dangers caused by humans, supposedly, the real enemy then is humanity itself. So they decided that the new enemy after the Cold War would be us, not them, because they got private jets and caviar and champagne. They'd rule over the future world governments, so they were fine. But the real enemy was humanity. That means the 99.99%. And that's what they've done. And that's why we have all this madness going on. And none of it makes real scientific sense, because it's just part of a corporate, very well constructed long game strategy and program. And it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but the funny thing, this last thing I'll say, Darren, on this, sorry, I'll let you in, but the funny thing is, I spent 20 years in management and corporate and got involved in some pretty sleazy stuff in many ways. This is an exact mirror image of how we did it in corporate. There's a top-down structure from the VPs down. The management layer imposed the strategies. And we also weed out engineers who have ethical concerns against certain manufacturing mass volume production of stuff that maybe will fail before it should, because more profits. This thing I'm talking about is exactly what we did, just at a much higher level. But the beauty of crony capitalism, corporate capitalism, working with government, which is fascism, the definition of it, the beauty of it is it's scalable. It's so organized and structured, it is scalable up to any level. So people think, but how could this be happening and coordinated? Well, they don't understand that corporate and institutional corruption is scalable. It can go to any level. That's an important thing. And that's why we have a problem, essentially.
And we saw that actually with COVID, with the fact that it was a global event that involved every single country, apart from the poorest, who couldn't afford tests. So they didn't have a pandemic, like Nepal in some places in Africa, but they didn't matter. So we saw how scalable it was with respect to that. You mentioned that, the problem on Earth is humanity itself. I think some of those scientists who are going along with the climate change narrative for a few dollars call it the disease of the Anthropocene. They actually view the public as a virus on the planet, and that might be, well, they want to get rid of some of us and reduce our numbers because we'll be easier to control. I'm being a bit conspiratorial there, Ivor. I apologize for that. What are the solutions to this? What can the public do to push back? Because I think they are waking up. Not enough, not in big enough numbers. There's no riots, no pitchforks yet. I keep saying we need some pitchforks. But people are waking up to it. And I think climate change is the narrative, which is the underlying narrative, that's actually helping people wake up, because people can see the weather when they look outside their window. What can those people who have woken up, apart from waking more people up, do to push back against this agenda? Because we're running out of time.
Okay, we're going to be quick. So the thing about climate change, of course, changes. And there may very well be an effect from human intervention. But there's no way it's a catastrophe, and there's no way it's relevant to a big problem in the next 100 years. So the climate change science is so ludicrous in its fundamentals against clear facts, like you can see yourself. That's why it's having an effect of people beginning to think, what the hell's going on? It gives COVID a run for its money in terms of ludicrousness. What can we do? The big thing is, unfortunately, it sounds a bit weak, it's awareness. If 20% of people had a good grasp of this story from Southampton, which is Dr. Jakob Nordengaard's, and we got it shared enough, it's all geopolitics, all documented. The one thing I tell people is, don't talk about chemtrails. Don't talk about 5G. I don't care if they're real. I don't care if they're a problem, right? Don't talk about stuff that is not fully published and documented. Because if you do, you're going to lose the room. Yeah. You'll just have an echo chamber of people who are angry and they know something's wrong and they're jumping on every latest supposed threat. This stuff, the Nordengaard story, the geopolitics, the fully documented history, is self-evident proof that what's going on is a scam. It's self-evident, right? Mm-hmm. We need to focus. They know that if a large minority were aware of the geopolitical history, this is just history, then they would have a massive problem, because people increasingly would just not listen and they would not accept their own politicians being the butt puppets of a bunch of super rich guys, right, who are gaming us all. So I think the awareness is huge. The other thing, it's like a two-hander, is do not comply and do not engage with the nonsense. So use cash, minimal electronic. Keep the systems of freedom alive. Get local producers of food. Make an effort. If you can, pay a little more. Real food locally. Support the farmers in their struggle because they're going after the farmers. Support your farmers. Support the people to make the food. Because we're dealing with not lizards, as I forget who used to say. No, these are just ultra rich, very nasty men who have realized that their need, they have more money than they can ever do anything with. Their need, their lust is for power and control. They want to run the ant farm. It's their desire because they have more money than they can do anything with. And Bill Gates is crystal clear in that position. So are all the others. Don't let them do it. Go to the real people, the 99.9% who produce your food, who are part of your community, and band together and push back on your idiot politicians and tell them you won't accept them getting votes from you and immediately asking the boys up top what they want them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mass non-compliance is probably our way out of it. I see there's some people also saying, Darren, now I think pitchforks is also a way out of it. I'm concerned that ultimately, mass non-compliance will probably just be met by force by the establishment, and we are barreling towards a situation where we might have guns on one side, pitchforks on the other, and it will be a battle to see who wins. You see that as a likely possibility, or because we're coming to the end of the show now, last minute, have we got something other than that positive to say to the audience, Ivor? And you've been a fantastic guest, by the way.
Oh, no, thanks so much, Darren. Well, I'd say, look, inevitably, understanding the full root cause tapestry and understanding geopolitics, and the other advantage I had was as a World War II buff for decades. I've watched thousands of hours of documentaries, and anyone who's a World War II buff, generally, they saw this thing for what it was. And the Eastern Europeans and the people who used to be under communist rule, they didn't fall for COVID. Right. No. So the problem is we have a fat, lazy three generations since World War II population in the West, and they are literally their cannon fodder for this nonsense. So a positive thing, I think ULEZ was a good example for international people. ULEZ is the ultra low emissions in London. Complete nonsense. But people are now putting covers over cameras, and I'm not promoting.
That'll do it for this Sunday, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation, and I hope it was extremely illuminating, which I believe it was. Links down below, as I said, and thanks so much to all of my Patreon and PayPal subscribers. You guys and people who support the likes of TNT Radio are pretty much the only hope we have of getting out accurate geopolitical history, accurate politics and what's going on in the world and why and what's actually happening, because sadly the mainstream legacy media have just fed us with a torrent of nonsense for many years now, and we really do need to counteract that with actual facts. So thanks so much, and anyone else who can hop in and support Patreon or PayPal, really appreciate it. Thank you.